The first of the Blood Horde reinforcements had made it to the cradles when the lights went out. They cursed the stupid Familia sods who had not the sense to surrender without playing childish tricks and turned on their own searchlights. The beams made harsh moving shadows of the construction machinery, the cradle supports, grapple housings, gantries, and the robotics that sprouted on them like barnacles on a dock. In the vacuum of the open repair bays, the laser rangefinders left no trace. The first victims didn't even see the little colored dots on their suits for squinting into that mass of bright lights and shifting shadows. They knew how to deal with this kind of resistance. It was tricky, with their own ship now moored in T4, but they lobbed in some of the little mines called bouncers and waited until three or four of them had blown up. They had proximity fuses, but would recognize patches on Blood Horde EVA suits, which made them only very dangerous to play with. They came on, alert for any more direct resistance. 100 more had made it alongside their own ship, alongside Wraith, when the lights came back on, flickered on and off several times, and then went out again. Helmet filters darkened, oscillated in response to the rapid changes, and finally cleared as the darkness came back. Again, their own lights probed the darkness, and they remembered the confusion they'd seen. They were not novices to be put off by such basic ploys. They didn't bunch up. They moved along in a disciplined skirmish line until their forward elements reached the airlock at the hub end of the repair bay. Then the big robotic sprayers, which had slid down the gantries centimeter by centimeter in the light, dropping meters whenever the lights weren't on them, rotated, aimed, and fired thick yellow liquid at them. It dispersed to a fine spray in the vacuum, a spray that adhered with equal rapidity to their suits, including the helmet viewplates. Not all of them got a full dose. Some, near the nozzles, were physically thrown off their feet by the force of the spray, and of those, a few managed to curl protectively into balls, so their helmet faceplates weren't entirely obscured. But it took a few critical moments to realize what had happened and its effect. In those few moments, their formation disintegrated. A few battered and blundered their way to airlocks, but the rest were blind, their external sensors clogged with spray, in some cases stuck fast to the deck by having unfortunately stepped on a coat of spray before it set completely. The suits were powered, they could pull free, but they couldn't see. They couldn't get the paint off with gloved hands. In fact, though they didn't know it, they'd have needed an unusual solvent to remove the paint without eating through the faceplate.
They're cursing the name and the war clan of someone named Volcrace.
Down on the deck of the repair bay, the brilliant yellow suits seemed almost to glow in the shadowy areas. Evidently, those mixing the paint had added reflectance and fluorescence to it.
Good. How many of them did the trap miss?
The external vid scans, hastily rigged a few hours before to cover areas not usually monitored, showed several clusters of Blood Horde invaders around the outer edges of the repair bays.
Perhaps 50, 100?
Let's keep them occupied.
The sprayers lifted much faster than they'd come down, the beaked nozzles rotating inward. Other machinery shifted up and down, back and forth, in an elaborate dance intended to look vaguely menacing. One enterprising operator detached one of the sprayers from its usual mounting and sent it toward the repair bay opening, as if in search of more troops to spray. He ran it out on a boom, its nozzles swinging threateningly from side to side, and watched on the vidscan as the Blood Horde troops shifted uneasily on their lines. One of them raised a weapon. His shot holed the paint reservoir. He hadn't thought what would happen if he succeeded. The bursting reservoir meant a cloud of dispersing paint, still tacky enough to cloud several more faceplates. The other troops lost the last remnants of discipline and rushed into the repair bay. Esme pulled herself into the ship. Both outer and inner hatches were open, which argued that anyone aboard would be in an EVA suit. She edged across to the inner hatch, noting the slightly greasy feel of a substandard artificial gravity generator, and peered around. She was looking into a large open compartment with rows of upright stanchions, each fitted with a top crossbar and several loops. It looked nothing like anything she'd seen in a fleet vessel. Then she realized how handy that apparatus would be for someone getting into an EVA suit without help. This was where the Blood Horde troops prepared for boarding.
Where's their bridge? Is anyone there?
Esme waved two of her people forward and two aft. She herself went forward behind the other two. She saw the leader's arm lift and held her breath. They and Bolri's team had the only five needlers available, weapons that were safe to use in the confines of a warship's bridge. His hand jerked twice, and then he moved forward. Esme followed, alert for movement from any direction. There was none. On the bridge, the Blood Horde had left two. She had no idea what their duties had been, and both were dead.
Let's get this ship going.
Someone dragged the bodies back to the big compartment near the locks. The specialists moved to their areas. The controls looked familiar enough, despite the odd lettering on the labels.
This will do, Captain.
Esme started to tell Petty Major Simpkins she wasn't the captain when she remembered that she was, at least for the moment, a captain, if not the captain. Simpkins was her engineering section, ordinarily in drives and maneuver.
It's just a basic small freighter picked up with some weaponry. Shields are more than civ level. The other shields are no better. It'll only take a few hits.
That it would take only a few enemy hits to destroy them was understood.
Weapons?
Weapons was Chief Aramanch, who held up a finger for a moment's more grace.
We've got almost a full arsenal of missiles, Captain, ample for the mission, but this thing has no beam weapons.
Which meant they'd have to come close to be sure of a kill.
Scan?
Power on, Captain. We're operational. And we have... There's Kossa's signal. The three other Blood Horde ships. One's probably a pirated super freighter, and the other's about this size.
Vokrace eyed the empty, curved passage uneasily. Something was different, and he couldn't be sure what.
Which deck is this?
Four.
Vokrace couldn't see or hear or smell anything definite, but he could not relax. Ever since he'd found that Bjerling was commanding, he'd had the feeling that things were going wrong.
Troubled pack leader.
Nothing I can taste, but...
His team was short-handed now. They were so few, and Bjerling hated him, he was sure. If Bjerling's people killed them all, it could be blamed on the Familius troops. No one would ever know.
We need a hostage. Someone Bjerling would want. Maybe those admirals, if any of them are still alive.
The Serrano cub?
No. If he's still alive, he's still just a cub. Bjerling will have to talk to us if we have important prisoners, and enough of his people were here to bear witness. Otherwise...
It's a bridge.
Yes, the bridge.
Running up the stairs ahead of the rest, his rage came back, and the energy with it. Bjerling's sons should all have shriveled balls. His daughters should all whore for prisoners in the arena. The Antbird Comity should fall to quarrels and jealousy, its last survivor dying poor and crippled. He saw the little pile of trash an instant too late to stop, and had just long enough to recognize what it might be instead, and extend his curses to the entire Familius Regnant. The question they couldn't answer ahead of time was what the other Blood Horde ships would do. Now, as they powered up Antbird's axe, Esme kept mental fingers crossed.
Think we ought to trust their life support?
No. Lift off when ready. Maximum acceleration. Ours, not theirs.
Antbird's axe bounded off the drive test cradle like a bucking horse. Its gravity generator compensated only a little.
Wow. I guess they moved the red line over.
18 decks of T3 flashed past. Then they were out in open space. Esme couldn't interpret the blurry scan she saw.
Where's the other one? Scan?
We're off. I'm taking the big one.
Scan.
Bam!
The scan image steadied, still grainy, but now she could interpret what she saw. Bolri's Blood Horde ship, that must be, veering from hers toward the biggest blip on the screen. The Blood Horde flagship, if they had flagships. Esme looked for her own target, which had been parked, as it were, some 1,000 kilometers on the far side of Kosciusko, where it had a clear shot down the throat of anyone coming through the jump point. Had it mined the jump point? She suspected not. Setting minefields wasn't a Blood Horde sort of thing to do, even if they had put that mine on Wraith. It didn't matter. She was going there anyway. The third Blood Horde ship, positioned in-system of the DSR from the jump point, would require a separate attack run. From where it was, missile attack would risk blowing Kosciusko. She hoped it was like this one and having no beam weapons.
Got it. Ready on your order, Captain.
That ship wants to know what you think you're doing. They're saying this is no time for dancing with the bear, whatever that means.
Esme's mind grappled with the geometry of it. Their motion relative to Kosciusko, to the Blood Horde ship, to the other Blood Horde ship. The distance, the velocity of the weapons, the probable quality of the other ship's shields, its maneuvering ability.
Hold it. We're going closer.
Going closer was like riding a polo pony. Antbird's axe, whatever its shortcomings by fleet standards, bounced happily from heading to heading with no resistance. She had been right to close. The other ship could dodge as well. Instead, it held its position, as if certain she was no threat.
The big one's moving, putting out quite a plume, but Bowery should have it.
Range in, Captain. Go ahead.
Aramanch hit the controls. The whole ship shuddered with every departing missile.
It's no wonder they don't mount beams on this thing. It'd fall apart.
On track. It's got...
The screen flared, and their target disappeared.
Good shot. Now let's go after that third one.
Two down.
That must have been Bowery in the other Blood Horde ship. Surely they hadn't gotten Wraith out that fast.
Lovely shot.
Esme glanced at Lucian's screen and saw that it was now much crisper than before. Maybe he was a genius. Their ship's artificial gravity wobbled as Simkins tried to maneuver sharply enough to get a good angle on the third Blood Horde ship. It had boosted toward Kosciusko, then veered as both Esme and Bowery went after it.
It's launched missiles. Tracking. One flight at Koss and one each at us and Bowery. Lousy aim. You'd think with a target the size of Koss.
We're not going to make it.
Wraith's position lighted up on Lucian's scan.
All hot. I didn't know they had that much left.
Got him.
And the entire port side array of beam weapons focused on the fleeing Blood Horde ship, overwhelming its shields. The screen flared again, a final time.
Captain to captain, I'd say there'd be no rank pulling on this array, huh? One each. That's pretty fair shooting. Even if two of them were sitting ducks.
Not our fault. Besides, you two had to get them with their own guns. That brings the challenge up to an acceptable level.
Thank you.
Esme grinned at her crew.
All right, let's get this thing back to Koss before someone else takes a pot shot at us.
There's nobody in this system who'd dare.
Esme brought Antbird's axe back to the test cradle with no flourishes. A Kosciusko crew waited to talk them into the docking pad and tie the little ship down with appropriate care. She supervised the power down, the locking of weapons. She made sure the two Blood Horde corpses were bagged and turned over to the deck crew. Simkins handed her the little red key, an actual key, she was startled to note, completely unlike the command wands that Fleet used to unlock controls, and she tucked it into the holdall of her suit. Then she followed the others out of the ship and closed the hatches herself. When they got back to Kosciusko, back into aired space and out of suits that had acquired a stench all their own, Esme found herself the center of a mass of people. Her crew, Wraith's crew, Bowery's crew, coming at a dead run through the tunnel, and at least half the people who'd been left in T3. She was hugged, pummeled. She and the other two captains were lifted shoulder high, carried through the passages toward the core, where she saw Admiral Dosignol, standing a little lopsided, near the lift tube cluster. Ceviche and Major Patak were beside him, watching her. The crowd slowed, still exuberant, but aware of stars and their implication. Esme managed to wriggle down and then make her way out of the crush.
Sir.
Good work, Lieutenant. Congratulations to all of you.
Is there any word
of Ensign Serrano?
Esme nodded and braced herself for the worst.
Yes. He was found. He's badly hurt, but alive.
He had not died because she'd done nothing. With the knowledge that he was still alive, her heart lifted to impossible heights. She turned back to the crowd, hunting for those she knew.
You did it! You did it! We did it!
Admiral Dosignol leaned over to Patak.
I do believe we can quit worrying, Major. I do believe that life has given her that kick in the pants.